Please welcome Dr. Mahler.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, well, obviously nothing clears a room like talking about social media strategy. I think 50% of the audience at least are still having coffee, and I know my colleagues are still having coffee through there, but we need to get going. So thank you once again for the invitation. It's up there. Originally I was asked to do a workshop on social networking and social media, and then discovered it's a lecture, so I had rather too many slides. I've cut a few out, and I've cut a few out, and there's probably still too many, but I'll go reasonably quickly. I've learned of nothing else in 25 years as an academic to be flexible. Now, I'm 60 years old. I know I don't look 60 years old, but thank you very much. Thank you. That's what I wanted. I was fishing for that compliment, also to see if you were awake. But I was described a few weeks ago in Holland as a 60-year-old digital native by a much younger colleague. I was very proud of it because I discovered social media maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I feel that I've never looked back. It's just ideal for blatant self-publicists like me, as you'll see, because most of the examples I'll use will be my own. I was described as a 60-year-old digital native because one of my colleagues, I say a much younger colleague in Holland, had noticed that I'd taken a photograph of my audience and tweeted it out while I was being introduced. And he spent the whole of the session trying to work out how to take a photograph of me and tweet it out by the end of the hour when I was speaking. So I was quite pleased at that. I feel I'm ahead of my children as well in the use of social media. So what I want to talk about is nothing to do whatsoever with healthcare, really. This could be anybody talking using social networking in academia, but it's becoming much more common these days for academics to use social networking, and I think there are ways of using it effectively. However, some people are a little bit frightened of social media, and if this were a smaller workshop, I'd ask for a show of hands. I'm not wanting a show of hands here, but for example, if we think how many of you have written a letter, well, actually, probably not many of you have written a letter. For those of us who are over 40 in the room, a letter is something that's on paper and you write it, you post it to people. We don't do much of that now, but most of us of the older generation have written letters. How many of you made a phone call, sent an email, sent a text, an SMS, WhatsApp, WeChat, Messenger, whatever, posted on Facebook, you know, or sent a tweet or written a blog? You know, as I say, I think at the top you'd find most people have done most of the things at the top, but as we get lower down the list, probably fewer and fewer people have done those things, even amongst the younger generation. And how many of you, for example, have posted on YouTube? Again, all these things are ways of social networking. Social networking is nothing new. And also, I just wonder how many of you have got your own website. They're very easy to produce. How many of you, for example, have got a Twitter site? I asked my workshop the other day how many had. A couple out of the 25 had. I'm sure more had, but people are shy of putting their hands up. I'm sure if I asked how many had a Facebook site, hundreds of hands would go, yeah, that's right, people are doing it already. Facebook seems to be very popular, and I'm very keen on Facebook as well, but I'm not entirely sure it's suitable for academic promotion unless it's used properly. How many of you have got a LinkedIn profile? This is becoming increasingly important in professionals. Mustafa's got one, colleagues down there have got one, really good. This is social networking for grown-ups, LinkedIn, but I think it's very important. Some of these are high maintenance, and some of these are low maintenance. I see LinkedIn as being very low maintenance. You put your profile up and then people look at it. Things like Twitter and Facebook are higher maintenance because you've got to kind of maintain them and keep doing things on them. How many have a Google Scholar site? That's other social networking for, a few hands going up as well. How many have got an ORCID number? None. Okay, an ORCID number. I'll come back to telling you what these things are in a minute. And simply, and similarly, I'm quite sure many of our academic colleagues have got a ResearchGate site. There are lots and lots of ways of social networking. What I want to do is to try and tell you something about the different means, some of which you'll know and some of which you won't know about, but also how to use them parsimoniously so that you don't spend all your time social networking and you use them to the maximum effect. So social networking, definition, don't have to read all that out, but basically the use of, these days it's come to be known as the use of internet-based social media programs, and increasingly people using them on mobile technologies like mobile phones, tablets, iPads and such like. And so social networking examples include all the things that I've said, especially Facebook and LinkedIn and such like. So it's something that people do. But I'm using slides courtesy of a colleague of mine in Australia. The problem is with social media is there's a bewildering array of platforms that you can use. And to be honest, some of these are already, for example, MySpace on the bottom left has already more or less defunct. So some of the sites become usurped by others and you need to keep up with that. But I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that you use every site that's available. But there are a lot of them, and they grow every other day. The newest one that I've got on my phone, I've got to have a look to remind myself, because I'm 60 years old and I can't remember things, is called Fling. I don't know if you've come across Fling. You can take a photograph and literally fling it out to the world, and people can follow it and make comments. Okay, so what's the point? Why would we want to be involved in social media? Well, the science now of infodemiology is that tweets of articles, which can include tweets from blogs and websites and such like, actually predict citations for papers. There's increasing amount of evidence for this. So those of us who are academics in particular should be aware of this. It's a way of promoting our work. Search engine queries across the world, people looking for information on particular diseases often predict those or preempt those diseases. People are beginning to get symptoms, so they look online. If we can track that as we do, often using social media, we can actually predict that there's going to be an outbreak. During the H1N1 pandemic in the Far East, the incidence rate was absolutely correlated with tweets about it. And tweets about movies, for example, can accurately predict their success at the box office. And I even believe that in San Francisco, people were receiving tweets about an earthquake before they actually felt it. People were tweeting from the epicenter outwards, and people were receiving tweets about it before they actually knew about it. So it's a very powerful way, a very rapid way of people communicating vital information. It has good points and bad points. During the recent disaster in Belgium, in Paris, where the terrorists were killing innocent people on the streets, the terrorists were monitoring. This shows you what a powerful weapon it is. The terrorists were monitoring social media sites in order to predict where people were hiding. And people were trying to contact their friends and saying, I'm hiding in such and such a building. And the terrorists were monitoring this and going to those buildings and killing people. However, the social media were also being used by the rescue services to find out where people were. So it's a kind of neutral platform. It can be used for good things. It can be used for bad things, as I'm sure you're aware. And here's one classic example. There are others, but an example from a journal called Transplantation, Social Media and Online Attention as an Early Measure of the Impact of Research in Solid Organ Transplantation. There are examples from other areas, but blogging and expert recommendation are definitely associated with the higher citation rate. There are some really convincing statistics to back this up. So if you want to get your message out to people, social media are the way to do it. However, I'm quite aware that many people feel like this. They just don't get Twitter, for example. They're afraid of it. They don't know what to do with it. And that isn't just amongst the older generation like me, many younger people as well. And I think you've really got to realise that whether you like it or not, and I'm surrounded by colleagues at my own university who claim not to get it, it's happening. People are using it, and I think you've really got to. I think it's imperative that we engage with it. So, what do we tweet about? Well, essentially, we tweet about what we do, and we need to increase our online profile. We need to be easily found, recognised, and also recognised for what we do. And useful social networking sites, this is for clinicians and academics, this is not for my children. I wouldn't recommend something like Fling, for example, for clinicians and academics, that's for other reasons. But Twitter, very useful, LinkedIn, Google Scholar, Blogger, you know, any type of blog, Researcher ID is very useful, that's the Thomson Reuters site if you have access to that. YouTube, I'll come back to giving some facts about YouTube in a minute, are all very useful. There are other ones that you could add in there quite easily. I think Facebook increasingly is useful, provided you link it to your Twitter site, and then you don't have to actually spend all your time on Twitter putting things up. I didn't see a great show of hands going up when I mentioned ResearchGate. There's also a site in the USA called academia.edu for academics to use, but I see clinicians using these too. Just a word of caution about these sites. I think they're excellent, but they do try to encourage you to put your publications on there online and make them available to other people, and you really have to be very careful that you have the copyright or that the papers are open access, because you will be chased by the publisher. So these are good sites. I think they're very good, but they've got to be used with caution. And I think they do tend to encourage people prematurely to put their work up there, so just be very aware of that. So specifically Twitter, I'm sure you know that, online social networking service, you can put out messages using 140 characters called tweets. And many people say 140 characters is not enough to say anything. Well, as an editor and a ruthless editor, 140 characters is perfectly ample to say most things. I haven't managed not to say anything on Twitter yet without the scope of the 140 characters. And there are various ways you can do this. It's a fantastic discipline to learn to write succinctly and to miss out your ands and thats and buts and your punctuation in order to get your message across. So I think Twitter's actually... I hope it never becomes bigger than 140 characters, because it's a very good medium. And the power of Twitter is that people retweet what you put out. This is the real power of it. You sending out a tweet to one person is not going to have much influence, but if you've got 100 followers and half of them tweet it out, it's gone out to 50 people. If they've got 100 followers each and so forth, it amplifies your message and does it very well. Sure, not everyone who gets a tweet reads it, but even if 10% of them do, that's more people than you would have reached if you just made a phone call to someone or emailed them and told them about your work. For example, a Digital Woman, I don't follow it, it's just an example, with 2,000 followers, that's not a great many followers, but they put out a tweet about some sort of magazine, but within three levels of tweeting, it reached nearly 20,000 people. Again, they aren't all going to read that, but if 10% of them do, I won't do the math in my head because I'm on stage, but that's a lot of people reading it, okay? That's about 2,000 people reading it. So that, and it can take literally seconds for that to be achieved. So don't underestimate the power of Twitter. And you've got to make your tweets as interesting as possible. So, using some examples from my own work, the Journal of Advanced Nursing has a Twitter site. This is very out of date. It says 7,500 followers. We now have 14,000 followers on that site. We have a specific social media's editor, Thane Chambers from the University of Alberta in Edmonton in Canada, and she looks after our social media. You must know her, of course, yes. And Thane's done a fantastic job in a very short period of time in doubling our followers. And we see this as the major way of marketing what we do. It's not an added extra. This is the major major way of marketing what we do. So we tweet out, a good Twitter site. If you've got a Twitter site, do make sure that you tell people things about yourself. I look at so many Twitter sites, it's just got a name and nothing else. But there's space there to put up what it is, for example, Impact Factor, who's on the journal, and link it to your webpage. The possibilities are endless to get more information across within a limited space, but you can be very imaginative and use it well. And try to put up, as I showed you, a profile picture. There's nothing worse than looking at a Twitter site with no picture. And I loathe it when I see a picture of a flower or a scenery or a car or something like that. I think people should put pictures up of themselves. Now, I know in this part of the world that can be a difficult concept, but it doesn't alter the fact that a photograph of yourself, even with a hijab on, is better than showing something abstract. It doesn't attract people to look at your Twitter site. And if you're on Twitter, I'm assuming that you want people to follow you. So we tweet out our contents, we tweet out specific papers, we retweet news from other people. That's my Twitter site there with my avatar on it, telling about an award of a colleague of a fellowship of the American Academy of Nursing a few years ago. And you can see, I link my YouTube site to it as well. So you can do all sorts of things like that. Hashtags, well, this is a mystery to great people, what the hash or hashtags. Well, hashtags are a very useful feature of Twitter whereby you can join concepts together, and they're rather underused, I think. They're often used wrongly, but underused. So these are all hashtagged things here. A hashtag shows you, takes you, if you click on the hashtag, to all the other pieces of information about that. So it's a way of quickly gathering information together. So I often forget to use hashtags, but we do use them within our social networking site and the journal very often. So you put it before, put this symbol before a relevant keyword, and it will take people to all of the information on that very, very quickly. If I want to follow my football team on a Saturday afternoon, I put in hashtag HCAFC, Hull City Association Football Club, and it takes me to the latest score, second by second, as to what's happening in the match from all the people who are at it and tweeting about it. For example, you know, we did a series of editorials on good and bad people in nursing. We didn't name them. We didn't name the bad people. We named the good people, and we call this the Thriller Elite. And we're going to do a repeat of this at some point. And that's all. If you put in hashtag Thriller Elite into your Twitter feed, you'll get all the comments on that particular set of editorials. So how to be useful on Twitter? Use links. Don't just put out a bland bit of information. Put in a link so you can see all the links there. They take you to something. Link them to pictures. This is from Hong Kong as it was happening, the Occupy Hong Kong movement. This was out within seconds of it happening, and I was in Hong Kong at the time when it took place. It immediately attracts people to your tweets. That's got a link and a picture. Hashtags, as I've said, and minimise the trivia. I've got a habit of being trivial when I'm watching the TV and things like that, but it doesn't really do anybody any good. Try to minimise that. Retweet interesting material. Don't retweet boring things. Nobody's going to read it. So that use the retweet symbol and put things out, and people will follow you in return if you retweet their material. But don't be offensive. And do be aware, friends and colleagues, of the career-ending tweet, okay? It's very easy. In the culture I come from, we drink alcohol, which sometimes lowers your inhibitions, and it's very easy after a couple of glasses of wine to think, I'm going to say this about somebody and put it out. Don't, okay? Because it could be your boss, your vice-chancellor, your hospital, whatever, and that will end your career as sure as anything, and it has happened. And you've got to be very careful as nurses not to put out material about your hospital or your patients and to break confidentiality. People have lost their jobs in the UK over that. Away from the dire warnings. Good people to follow on Twitter. Well, obviously I'm good to follow on Twitter and my journal, but I find Philip Derbyshire exceedingly good value for money. Deborah Jackson from Australia, now working in the UK. Caleb Ferguson from Australia, very, very good value for money. But you know, you'll find people to follow quite easily. And if you want to know how do you find these people, put their names into Google and put Twitter after the name. If they're frequent tweeters, it'll take you right to their Twitter site. And then you can follow them. And again, back to those of us who are academics, we're moving a little bit away from the impact factor and citations these days to look at something called alternative metrics or alt metrics. And alt metrics are based on mentions and social media. There's quite a complicated algorithm to work it out. But just to show you how seriously we take this, we publish the alt metrics of our papers on the landing page of our journal when you click on that paper. So major publishers like Wiley and Elsevier, and I'm sure others are paying huge attention to alt metrics, and of course doing everything we can to increase the alt metrics. That's why we use the social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn and so forth. LinkedIn, very quickly, this is another social networking site for the business community, increasingly being used by the academic community. It's a good way to make links with people. I've had many invitations to conferences and things like that to collaborate through LinkedIn. That's my LinkedIn profile, blatant self-publicist, as you can see. do make sure, you know, you're always getting invitations to complete your profile. You can put other things up there. Make sure your profile's complete. If you're on here, don't be shy. This is not for what we would call in my country the shrinking violet, the shy person. Get out there, tell people about yourself without exaggerating or telling lies. And put a photograph up. As you can tell, that's a younger photograph. Journal of Advanced Nursing, we have a LinkedIn site, of course, and we actually make great use of this. We've got platforms below it where we hold discussions with our editorial board and with our reviewer community. So it's proved to be very, very useful indeed for gathering information from people who are engaged. Blogging. Blogging was where it all started, really. Twitter's a microblog. Blogging gives you more space to write. But this is another important area. And people say, well, Twitter's really usurped the blog. It hasn't really, because blogs are somewhere where you can vent your feelings and write at length about something, but not at too much length. Try and write within one page of the internet. That's a much more effective way to do it. But you can then tweet out the links to the blog, and that's how most people find blogs, through Twitter. So I've got my own blog about the Francis Report in the UK. It was mentioned yesterday. I run a blog at the faculty of... faculty in my country means an organisational unit, the Faculty of Health at my university. So I put up news about all our publications, and I've got my own blog with Sigma Theta Tau Research and Nursing Leadership, where I put up... they're put up for me. I'll do a blog entry from this visit. And we've also got a blog at the Journal of Advanced Nursing. And I can use these personally, and we can use them organisationally to push out our material. When you're doing a blog, try to put pictures in. It makes it much more attractive. And when you tweet it out, the picture shows up on the Twitter feed, which in our case also shows up on our Facebook feed, because we're linking the Twitter to the Facebook site. So you can link them all together. YouTube. I've also got a YouTube site. My helper, Mass, I think her name is, when she came to meet me, she said, "You have grandchildren." And I said, "How do you know that?" She said, "I checked, I found your YouTube site and found your grandchildren on it." My grandchildren steal my iPhone, they know my password, and they make little videos and put them up automatically on my YouTube site. I have to take some of them down, by the way. But anyway, YouTube. Remarkable fact about YouTube. True facts about YouTube. 20 hours of video are uploaded every minute. So if we stopped now and held our breath for a minute, 20 new videos, 20 hours worth of video would be put up. In a day, 100 years worth of videos uploaded on YouTube. This is the major social networking site of the world and increasingly being used to find information. It's the second biggest internet search site in the world. Google, obviously, is the biggest one, but there's not far behind it. The story of YouTube is just an incredible story, and I'm beginning now to see the value of it much more so than before. So at the Journal of Advanced Nursing, we have a YouTube. If you click on that on our site, you'll see YouTubes of me talking about the journal and also some of our authors talking about their papers. And you can see we link our Twitter site, our LinkedIn site, and our blog to that as well. Google Scholar is, again, this is free. Anybody can sign up to Google Scholar. You can't all sign up to Researcher ID, unfortunately, because it's linked to Thomson Reuters Web of Science, and your university or hospital has to subscribe to that. But Google Scholar is free, and it's a way of linking yourself to your publications. It's exceedingly low maintenance. You have to check it now and again to make sure it hasn't put publications up there that are not yours, and it follows your citations and follows your itch index. So Google Scholar is very good. Your profile, again, photograph, and you'll be fed up seeing my photograph by the end of this. And what it does, if you move over to the right, it gives you your citations, your itch index, and the total number of citations there. So it's very useful. And the Google Scholar itch index is much bigger than other ones, but it picks up absolutely everything you've done that's online. Conference presentations, abstracts, the lot. And it is increasingly, it was frowned upon at one time, it is increasingly being recognised as a way of judging academic performance. It's not the only way, of course. Don't become too obsessed with these things. Researcher ID, I won't go into the details of it, it's essentially run by Thomson Reuters, but if you have access to this, create a profile, associate it to your ORCID number. I'll tell you what an ORCID number is in a minute. You'll see it at the end of all my presentations on my slide. And build up your publication list that way, and generate metrics from Web of Science as well. And that's what a researcher ID site looks like. It's not very exciting, I have to say. You can link it to an ORCID number, and ORCID numbers are a unique identifier in the digital sphere, in the internet. And it's a way of linking all your grants, all your publications, and your career online. And it's just developing, and it's now becoming almost obligatory to have an ORCID site. Some universities are insisting. And when you register to publish a paper these days in my journal and with Elsevier, they ask you for your ORCID number, so the paper is automatically linked. You don't have to do anything about it when you submit a research grant. If you go for a job soon, I think you won't have to produce a curriculum vitae or a resume. They'll just ask for your ORCID number and check that, because it's a standard way of presenting information. In the, where I come from in the UK, when a woman gets married, it still often changes her name from her maiden name to her surname. I don't know what happens in the Arab world or elsewhere. I know that it doesn't happen with some people. It's always been advised to women not to change their name academically, but to keep the same name. However, they can do what they like now. If they've got an ORCID number, it doesn't matter what they call themselves. They can change their name completely. They can change genders if they want. The ORCID number remains the same. So it's very, very useful. So ORCID's, it's a non-profit organisation, doesn't cost you anything to register. It takes you about 5.5 seconds to put up your initial profile, but then you need to build it up after that, and it's worth doing, I can assure you. And that's what my site looks like. It's a little bit more exciting than the Researcher ID site. It's got your biography, publications, research grants, presentations, anything that you want to put up there, and your career. Okay, I'm just looking at the time. Excuse me, just while I take a drink of water. We started a little bit behind time. I hope I can get us back on track. I would strongly advise you, don't run your social networking sites in isolation if you want to increase your profile. That's one of the key things. That's the strategy, essentially. First part of the strategy is having good social networking sites. Second thing, you know, keeping up to date as much as you can, but don't run them in isolation. Develop a strategy for promoting your work and your profile. If you're worried about your personal life becoming entangled with your working social media site, by all means have two sites. I don't think it's necessary. I think we should be professional in whatever social networking sites we use. If we're professionals and under some sort of professional code, like I am from the Nursing and Midwifery Council in the UK, my personal profile can get me in as much trouble as my professional profile. So I think we should actually not have the fear. We should actually run them very responsibly. Decide what your essential content is. What is it you really want to promote and get out there? Not absolutely everything that you ever thought of. We get very tired of celebrities telling us what they're having for breakfast, you know. I think it's unnecessary. You know, Justin Bieber may have more followers than the population of China, but what's going up there is pretty trivial stuff. Decide how you're going to get it out there. How are you going to get this bit of information out there in the most effective way? Now, this is a horrible diagram. I'm not into these diagrams very much, but I thought I'm just going to go through this quickly to show you. I think you've got to think in two ways with your social media strategy. One is the transmission of your strategy, and the other is the embedding of your strategy. So transmitting it out, the red arrows show what you can transmit out. You can transmit out your YouTube to LinkedIn, you can link it to Twitter, you can link your publication and metric site like ORCID ID to Twitter, you can link your blog, you can link your website, you can link your LinkedIn, you can link almost anything out that way, okay? The old way used to be email, but notice the email is kind of, it's isolated, it's a one-off thing. However, the other side of the strategy is you can embed things. So you can embed these sites together, and you can embed sites in your email. Many of us put a link in there, so that when your email goes out, your Twitter site goes out, your YouTube site goes out, your profile goes out, decide again which ones you want to put out. There's nothing worse than looking at somebody's email signature with 20 links. Have two or three links. And if you link it to your Twitter one, they're going to pick up all the other stuff as well. So think it through. And I think it's really important to tell people what this is. Your Skype address, for example, that's another useful thing to put in there. So you can embed things. So the blue ones mean embedding. So you embed some things back the way you embed some things forward. There's no end to it, okay? That's what it looks like if you do it all together. It looks like General Custer's last stand with arrows flying everywhere. But this is the... If you get it set up properly like that, what you then get is a lot of collateral pickup. So people looking at your LinkedIn site get all the stuff that's embedded there. You know, people looking at your website find all the stuff that's embedded there, and also the blog. So there's more ways of getting things out to the public. Some of it will get there collaterally, some of it will get there deliberately. You're all on camera now. And just to show you how important it is to embed these things, again, an example from my own website at the University of Hull. Not exactly the most exciting website you've ever seen, I have to say, but we are allowed to put links up. And so I link up my researcher ID, my ORCID, my list of publications, which is on a separate social networking site, my Google Scholar site, and also my Sigma Theta Tau blog. So I'll show you that I live by the example I'm trying to set here. And I've just found it hugely effective in getting found. And people find you for very specific things. You know, they know what you do because they can check your profile. So remember, be responsible and be professional. There are people who get in a lot of trouble by doing the wrong thing on social media. Once it's up there, it can be difficult to get down. Challenges to you, if you haven't done it already, set yourself up a Twitter account if you don't have one. I think Twitter is the spearhead of any social media campaign. Describe yourself in your profile. Don't hide behind it. Have a photograph. Send out a tweet, see what happens. It's always nerve-wracking sending your first tweet out. Tweet one interesting link to someone. If you send a tweet out saying, I'm now on Twitter, very few people will get back to you. Send out an interesting link and it'll be amazed. Some people search Twitter very specifically to find things. You'll find that gets picked up and retweeted. See how much information you get into 140 characters. That's a good exercise. And if you can't get it in there, think how else you're going to get that information across. What about the thing that everybody worries about? People talk about being overloaded, having far too much to do. You haven't got time for social media. Well, I think, like writing for publication, as I said the other day, I think you've got to make time for it. But you can do it parsimoniously. You can do it in such a way it doesn't overload you. I think there's a tendency for a start when you're a novice social media person, a bit like I was, you do become a little bit obsessed with it. Believe me, it does die down after a while. You do grow up and you get used to it and you become more adept at knowing what to send out and when to send things out. And there are all sorts of automated ways you can set up your social media sites, but again, you need to think about them very carefully. It can be a proper pain in the neck for recipients getting irrelevant material all the time that gets automatically retweeted. So I use automated tweeting facilities with caution. But just, you know, if you feel you're getting overloaded with it, stop and do something else. Nobody's trying to force you, okay? So that's all, folks, as Walt Disney said. Just again to show you that I live by what I preach, that's my ORCID number. So if you put that number into Google, you'll find a lot of things about me. My Twitter site, Journal of Advanced Nursing Twitter site, and my other newer open access online pay-to-publish journal has a Twitter site as well, Nursing Open. And my email if you want to amuse me or abuse me or ask me any questions. Thank you very much indeed.